Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Samach Vov. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Before we begin the shiur, let us glance at the nosei, the topic heading that appears at the very top of Daf Samach Vov. You will notice that we've written in the outside margin under what we call the nosei, which is a topic heading, Eze hevdel bedin yesh bein shnei habraisos. What legal difference is there between the two Tanaic sources that we have seen, Li'el Samachei Omer Aleph? We saw at the bottom of Samachei Omer Aleph two Tanaic sources, and they were called Tana Debei Rav and Tana Debei Yishmoel. If you have the option of scrolling back or turning back to Daf Samachei Omid Aleph, you'll notice we have diamonds at the bottom of Samachei Omid Aleph, which introduce these two Tanaic sources. We, of course, were dealing with the topic of locusts or insects that are kosher. The Torah itself lists what appears to be four kinds of insects, and they were featured in the Tanaic sources that we saw, the relevant pasuk, and we had along with that the words four extra seemingly extra words lemino, and the two Tanaic sources referred to them. Here the Gemara asks, practically speaking, what is the difference? So the Gemara on the top line, Samach Vavam Aleph, B'mai Komifligi Tono Debei Rav, V'Tono Debei Rabbi Shmuel. What is the practical difference between these two sources? Answer, B'Roshei Oruch Komifligi. An insect whose head is elongated will be the point of difference. It may be safe to say that the four insects that are listed in the Pasuk itself, none of them have an elongated head. The question is, can I, from through a drosha mechanism, establish or include even a rosho oroch, an elongated head insect, provided it has other signs of kashrus? So, we should also, before going any further, we just started what is in effect a long answer. You can see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text a tuf that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line. This is a teretz, and it indicates, this dashed line indicates the number of lines of Gemara that will form the answer. So the Gemara continues, Tana Debei Rav Savar, Asher lo kroayim, which is a phrase you could see we have in quotation marks, it's from the Pasuk. That expression equals klal, is a general expression. Arbis solem chagol chagov leminehu. We have five words here. Four of them are names of insects, the arbis solem chagol and chagov. And the word leminehu is an expression meaning according to each one's category. Prat, that represents a detail or a specification. And therefore, the structure of this pasuk is as follows. Klal uprat, ein bichlal elamashe beprat. When you have a sentence or a Torah sentence, a pasuk, that's structured with a general comment as an opener and followed by specifics, then we can say that the general category, in this case kosher insects, will contain nothing other than that which is very similar to the details, to the specifics. And that's what's meant here, demine in, an insect that is like that which is referenced in the pasuk, we can include the lav, mine, loy. Something that is not like that which is already mentioned in the pasuk, we will not be able to include as being kosher. Umarbi de domi le mishnei tzadim, and as a result, we are able to include only those other kinds of insects that are similar to the ones listed, mishnei tzadim, with two, with if it has two or both regards, both aspects. And what are we? What do we mean when we say both aspects? So we've written between the lines, based on the Rabbeinu Gershom, the two aspects that are necessary in order for something to be categorized as kosher. It has to have the four body signs that we've made reference to numerous times before, and it has to also have or lack rosho oruch, to be non rosho oruch. Of course, the four body signs that we have mentioned before were the four raglayim, the four legs, the four wings, the jumping legs, the katsulayim, and knof of choifin esrubo, where the wings cover the majority of the body. Those are the four body signs. And in addition to that, we need, as we just mentioned, ein rosho oruch. Now, we continue in the answer here. Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, that's the other Tanaic source, Savar, he breaks the Pasuk down differently. And he holds, Asher lo kro'ayim, that phrase equals klal. That represents a general statement. Arbe solom chagol chagov equals prat. Those are names of insects. And now, here is the big difference. Leminehu chozer v'kolal. The Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel views the word leminehu as not part of the specification or the specifics, but rather as a general statement. And as a result of this, the sentence structure is different, and hence has different powers of inclusion. Klal uprat uklal yatadon elokein haprat. When you have a structure like this, we say that that which will be included must be ke'ein haprat. Notice there's a slight difference in terminology. Before, when the rule was presented under the Tana Debei Rav, they were dealing with a klal uprat. And the rule there stated, ein b'chlal elo ma'ashe b'prat, only that which is like the specifics. This is similar to the specifics. As a result of this difference, we can include more. Umarbi kol dedomi le bechad tzad. We therefore are able to include under the category of kosher insects anything that is like the that which is listed in the pasuk already, with one category of similarity. And we are in effect saying it's enough if another insect happens to have the four body characteristics that we mentioned before, and even if the head structure is different. And that's how the Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel will end up holding that even an insect with an elongated head, provided it's got the four legs, the four wings, the katsulayim, and knof of chofin es rubo, those four body characteristics is enough to categorize it as kosher. We now continue in the Gemara with a long question. The length of this is indicated by the long question mark. You can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, you see a kuf that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line. So the Gemara asks, V'ho lo domi klola kama l'klola basra. According to the Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, that we have a klal prat uklal structure, namely general, specific, and then general sentence structure. If that would be fine and good as far as its ability to include other things, and fine and good to call it a klal prat uklal, provided there was a balance between the opening general statement and closing general statement. However, here there's a lack of balance, and the Gemara spells it out. We've underlined the expression klola kama, and two lines later, klola basra. Klola kama means the first general, namely asher lo krayim, omar rachmona. In order for something to be kosher, it's got to have legs. The is le echol, if it has four krayim, then you can eat it. The less le lo techol, if it doesn't have the kraayim, then you cannot eat it. So, according to this, any insect that's got four legs, or it's got the kraayim, you could eat it. Whether or not it's knof of choifin es rubo, whether or not it's got katsulayim, this would be very, very general, very inclusive. Many, many, many more insects would be included if this was your only standard. However, klola basra, which said leminehu. Leminehu means like these. Like the specifics will include others, but like these. That's ad deshavu ba'arbo'o simonim. Something will not be kosher unless it's got the four body signs, which is going to limit you much more. So how can you present, how can the Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel be presented as darshaning klal, pratin klal, when it's not really that way? It's not a balanced klal statements at beginning and end. The Gemara answers, Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, b'kloli uproti ki hai gavno, do'in. Ude amrino nami ba'almo, de do'in Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, b'kloli uproti ki hai gavno, mehocho. We'll go over this. The Gemara says that the Tana Rabbi Shmuel, this school of thought holds that kloli proti ki hai gavno, that means if you have general and specifics like this, namely where the opening klal and the closing klal are not balanced, do'in means they do darshan it, they do elaborate on it, it is allowed to teach us. And in general, damrino nami ba'amod, and that we say in general that the Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, the doin, once again means darshins, expounds on b'kloli proti ki hai gavna, klal uprats like this, namely imbalanced klal expressions, that there's a known approach that throughout the Shas where it's mentioned that the Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel does darshin klal uprats like this, mehocha means this is the precedent setter. This sets the precedent, that namely the pasuk concerning the insects. Omar Mar. Now we have a framed section. This is a quote from the end of the long brisa that we saw on Samach Hei Omid Beis. In order to help you find where this quote is coming from, so we've provided an arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, indicating Samach Hei Omid Beis, and if you go back to Samach Hei Omid Beis, there should appear an arrow, three lines from the end of the long framed section indicating Samach Vov Omid Aleph. Omar Mar. There, it was said, I Shmoi Chagov, the Brisa had come to a conclusion, or had been approaching a conclusion, that says that it's important for the insect to be called a Chagov, because if not, then we would have included even the Tsar Tsur, which is a known unkosher variety insect, even though it has the four body signs. So we said, well, the tzartzur is not included because it's not called chagov. So if then the name chagov becomes all important, so the brisa asked if that's what's important, then yochol ein bo kol asimonim halalu. Could it be that even if an insect doesn't have any additional signs, all that it has is it's called chagov, would it be kosher? Tamad lomar leminehu ad shiu bo kol asimonim halalu. Therefore, the word leminehu comes to limit me and say it has to have, in order to be kosher, the four body signs. This Gemara that we're about to learn now does something that doesn't happen all the time, but it analyzes what's called a havamina. It's analyzing the plausibility of the possibility that was raised. In other words, we have a maskona. The maskona, the conclusion is that the fact that it's called chagov is certainly not enough. But there was a possibility raised that that even something that doesn't have all of the body signs, it would be kosher. So what the Gemara is going to ask now is, could you have even had such a hava amina? Could you have entertained such a possibility? So here the Gemara asks, Ein bo kol hasimonim halalu. In the frame section we just read, it said, could it be that even if it doesn't have all the body signs? So to this we ask, Meheicha tesi, from where would you have even thought to derive such a conclusion? In other words, where would you have even thought that if it doesn't have the four body signs? Arba v'chargo ksiv. the Pasuk has specific examples, and the specific examples that the Torah cites are only those that have the four body signs. So where would you have come off to thinking that even if it doesn't have, that even if it doesn't have, it would be kosher? The Gemara explains the Havamina. E lok siv sol'om, had the Torah not included this sol'om insect, then ke de ko'amris, then I would agree that there would have been no no Havamina to include something other than that which has four body signs. However, hashta dechtiv sol'om lirbuye rosha oruch, now that we have seen, and this we didn't see today, but we saw this on Daf Samach Hey, that the fact that the Torah wrote Sol'om, and it wrote it, as we saw, to include elongated heads, and elongated head creatures are not in the list of things, are not included in the list of insects that the Torah cites. So that by writing Sol'om, I saw that we will call breach the fence and included more than that which the Torah specified. And this, just to remind ourselves, happened as a result of the fact that the Sol'om itself, to include it as being kosher, need not have been written. We pointed out that if the Torah would have just written Arba and Chargol alone, I would have been able to figure out Sol'om. So why did the Torah bother writing Sol'om? To teach me even elongated head, which is a characteristic that none of these actually have. But since we see that we go beyond the boundaries, as we said, breach the fence, meaning we go beyond the boundaries of what the Torah writes anyway, Emo lirbi nami koldehu. Well, if you're going to go out and include things that aren't specified here, so let's go all the way and include anything, just as long as it has the name Chagov. Komash Malon, that's why we have the word Leminehu, to teach me not to go so far as to include anything, just as long as it's called Chagov, but rather, in addition to being called Chagov, it has to have, the insect has to have the four body characteristics in order to be kosher. The continuation of the Gemara necessitates the ability to refer back to Daf Samach Hei Omid Aleph, and the Gemara asks, "My shna hosam de amris sol'om ze roshun." And if you go back to Samach Hei Omid Aleph, then you'll notice there's an arrow at the lower part of Samach Hei Omid Aleph with an indication of Samach Vav Omid Aleph, which ties into our Gemara here. On that line, four lines from the bottom over there, it mentioned in naming the insects that the Torah called by their various names, the Tanaic source gave us a more familiar equivalent. When we say more familiar, it meant more familiar to the Tana or to the Gemara. And it said there that the Sol'om is more commonly known as the Roshun. And that was dashed underlined at the lower part of Samach Hei Omid Aleph. And it also said Chargoil Ze Nipul. That was mentioned as well. One of the words that we also had underlined there, chagol, and dashed underlined ze nipol. Umay shna hocha, and when you go to Samach Hei Omid Beis, the amris there, it says sol'om ze nipol. When it refers to the sol'om, and here we're talking about the second, third line from the top of Samach Hei Omid Beis, says the sol'om is a nipol. And chargol ze roshun, and there it says also on Samach Hei Omid Beis, and we have arrows helping all along the way, and it says there that the chargol is the roshun. So on Samach Hei Omid Aleph, things seem to be the opposite of the way they appear on Samach Hei Omid Beis. The Gemara answers, Mar ki asrei, umor ki asrei. Each Tana refers to the insects as they are known in their respective locations. Rashi explains, Mor ki asrei, roshun de Tana de Bei Rav, hu nipol de Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel. The roshun of the Tana de Bei Rav is the nipol of the Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel, and roshun de Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel Hu nipol de tana de bay rav. Ubein lamar, bein lamar. Either way, salam ein lo zonav. Either way, the salam is an insect that has no tail, and the chagol yesh lo zonav. The chagol does have a tail. Turning to the Gemara, we now go to a new topic, and we have a topic heading for this Gemara on the outside margin. You see it says Nosei Kloli, it means general topic, and we've indicated Ad Daf Samach Zayin. So this general topic keeps us occupied till Daf Samach Zayin. Minim Hanimtzaim Bamayim. We're referring to creatures found in the sea. Some acceptable, some one can eat, and things that one cannot eat. Tano Rabbana, where the Dibor Maschil, where the two dots appears with a dogim, with regard to fish, the Mishnah taught us, Kol Sheyesh Lo Snapir V'Kaskeses. Those fish that have fins and kaskeses, scales, are kosher. Tano Rabbana, the Gemara opens up with a Tanaic source that deals with a phenomenon that we learned earlier in the context of insects. Ein loy achshov the osid legadol achar zman. Let us say you have a fish that doesn't have the signs of kashrus now, but as the fish matures, it will develop those signs of kashrus. Kigon hasultanis v'afion, fish which are those names specifically. Those are names of fish. Hareze muter, it's okay. It's as long as that kind of fish develops them longer on, when they are young, they are okay, even though they don't have the signs of kashrus in their young age. Yesh loy achshav yosid lahashirin b'shal shreilu min hayam. Let's say you have a situation with while they're in the water, the fish has the signs of kashrus. However, as you pull the fish out of the water, it sheds its scales, so that by the time you get the fish onto the boat or onto dry land, it won't have scales. Kagoin, and now this is characteristic of the akunis. Other names here: the afunis, caspiseus, the ax petius, the atunis, hare ze muter. Those are names. All these are names of different kinds of fish that shed their signs of kashrus as they're being drawn out of the water. It doesn't matter as far as kashrus is concerned; it's still considered kosher. Tanan hosam, we have a Tanaic source that deals with the fins and scales. Kol sheyeshlo kaskeses yeshlo snapir. Any fish that has scales on it will have fins. V'yesh, there are those sheyeshlo snapir that have fins, v'ein lo kaskeses. They have fins, but have no scales, meaning they never had scales and never will have scales. Yesh lo kaskeses, v'yesh lo snapir. A fish that has scales and has fins equals dag tohor. Yesh lo snapir, v'ein lo kaskeses. If it has fins and has no scales, equals dag tomei. It's an unkosher fish. Michti, akaskeses ko samchinon. After all is said and done, michti means, let's look into this. Akaskeses, regarding the scales, ko samchinon, we rely. We rely on the scales. There was a rule that was said at the opening of this source, if it has scales, you can rest assured it has fins. So all you have to do is you look for the scales, and that's enough to establish kashrus. Lichtov rachmona kaskeses velo lichtov snapir. Let the Torah therefore write that if a fish has scales, it's kosher. Why does the Torah bother writing anything about snapir? It mentions the fins also. The Torah should not have written snapir at all. Answer: E kosav rachmona kaskeses velo kosav snapir. Had the Torah used the word kaskeses and not written snapir, havamino my kaskeses snapir vafilu dag tomei, I would have thought that what is kaskesis, I would have just seen the word kaskesis, I would have thought, oh, kaskesis, that means fins. And then I would have included, in fact, things that we know now are dag tomei, or unkosher variety fish. Therefore, it would have been dangerous, so to speak, for the Torah to have written that all you need are kaskesis. Because, let's just repeat ourselves, if the Torah would have written kaskesis, I would have interpreted that word to mean fins. Therefore, we go on in the Gemara, kosav rachmona snapir vekaskeses. It writes both words. So this way, you're locked in, so to speak, that even if you want to, let us say, you want to translate kaskesis as fins, so then you're going to have to explain that snapir are scales, which of course is not an accurate translation, but either way will get you to saying that you need to have scales. V'hashta dekosav rachmona snapir v'kaskesis. Okay, the Torah writes both words. Mimai dekaskesis levushahu. How do you know the translation of these expressions? And specifically, how do you know that kaskesis is a reference to levusha, literally means that which it wears, but that which is along its body, the scales? How do you know that? Dichtiv, the pasuk says, v'shiryoin kaskasim hu lavush. So you see in this pasuk, the word kaskasim, like kaskesis, and it's associated with lavush, something that's worn, that's on his body. At this point, then, it's clear to us that the word kaskesis, in fact, means scales. And you can see by this pasuk in Shmuel Aleph that that's the obvious meaning of kaskesis. If that be the case, that brings us back to the question we asked a few lines ago, not realizing at that time that kaskesis was so obviously scales. And now that we've established that it's obvious that kaskesis means scales, couldn't the Torah have written just kaskesis? V'lichtov rachmona kaskesis, v'lo lichtov snapir. And the question that was raised before, namely, had it written just kaskesis, I would have thought it means fins. That's not so. I see from this posuk in Shmuel Aleph, v'shiryon kaskasim, I would never have thought that kaskasim means fins. Therefore, let the Torah have just written scales, and we have a rule that was said before that any fish that has scales definitely has fins. Omar Rabbi Avo, v'cheitono debe Rabbi Shmuel, yagdil toiro v'adir. The Torah writes an extra word, giving us an opportunity to learn another word of Torah, even though I could have figured it out on my own. Nevertheless, we get there's a glorification of the Torah by having this extra word put in for me to learn and study it. The Tosfos comments on this, Yagdil Tor V'Adir, Harbe Omar Lonu Ta'omim, Leida Ma'u Kaskesis. The Torah goes out of its way to give detailed explanation in order for us to know what kaskesis is. In other words, in addition to the fact that the word kaskesis has an obvious translation, it also writes the word snapir so as to emphasize that kaskesis is a reference to scales. As we continue in the Gemara, we have a nosei, a topic heading, featured on the outside margin, an indication that this discussion goes until the end of Samach Zayin Amud Aleph. We've written in the parentheses, Ad Sof Samach Zayin Amud Aleph, and it's the bottom of the first side of page Samach Zayin, Droshos Psukim Be'inyan Heter Toloim, and we have a list of names, and then afterwards, Iser Toloim. Not names, a list of locations, we'll say. What did we just say? The Gemara will darshan psukim, after which we're going to end up with something that for many of you may be a real big surprise, or what we sometimes call an eyebrow razor, namely a surprise that people who have even general familiarity with laws of kashrus, people who keep kosher, there are many, many people that even if they don't consider themselves fully observant Jews, they nevertheless, one of the basic practices people practice is kashrus. And people, even people like that, that are not very Torah knowledgeable, do know that worms is not on the kosher menu. We're going to bring to the fore a very surprising possibility, and don't by any means take our words and now go out and apply it practically speaking, because when we learn Gemara, we always have to bear in mind that the Gemara is the basis of practical law, but it's not the epitome of practical law for us. For us, we have the Shulchan Aruch, which is the final word. However, in the development of halacha, one comes across things that could actually be of practical significance. But we're trying to take extra precaution that anyone who's listening to our Gemara markings, recorded shiurim, won't take our words and act thereupon. So that disclaimer having been said, we're going to come out of today's discussion with the realization that sometimes worms, or toloim, these are creatures, and we'll talk about water creatures, that do not have any signs of kashrus. A water worm, for example, can actually be kosher, and one would be allowed to eat it. Once again, not practically speaking, but as far as Torah law is concerned. When we say Torah law, we mean something in its initial stages of development before rabbinic restrictions are imposed. And in our list, or the note that introduces this Gemara, you see that we've mentioned that we're going to darshan psukim regarding heter toloyim, the allowance of worms. And we've noted bekelim, worms found in vessels, beboros, beshichin, bemaoros. These are different types of holes dug in the ground for water storage. And if you have these kind of you have vessels or pits of coming in different sizes, and you notice that a worm is growing in there, and it's clear to you that it did not come from some outside source, but it developed in there. It developed from nothingness, its entire life cycle was in these things. It will be allowed. Now, Isur Toiloyim, we will also make reference to the prohibition of worms. When we speak about worms as being prohibited in the context of a discussion concerning water, they will be prohibited. If you find the worms in Bayamim, in the seas, Benecholim, in rivers, Ni'itzim and Charitzim. Ni'itzim and Charitzim are types of canals or ditches that have in them running water. We will eventually be able to make a general rule that worms that develop in stagnant water are acceptable. Worms that develop in running water, in bodies of running water, or water that's in movement, those are unacceptable. So that even though, when you just look at the Torah on a very superficial level, the Torah insists on having fins and scales in order for something to be kosher, the question we will be dealing with is, okay, granted that there's a standard of kashrus, but where, under what circumstances, is this standard binding? Because it could be, as we will see, that under different circumstances, this standard of needing fins and scales is waived, is not binding, or it was never said in the first place. We will be darshaning a couple of psukim, and we've written these psukim on the outside margin. They come from Vayikra, Perek Yud, Psukim Tes, Yud, and Yud Aleph, and Yud Beis. So the psukim are here for your convenient for your convenience, for your reference. And as we said, this sugya continues till the bottom of Samach Zayin Amud Aleph. So there will be certain points of reference that are made in this Gemara that won't be clear as we learn our daf today, but on the next daf, things mentioned here will become clarified. So now let's turn to the Gemara after having given that introduction. Tonu Rabbanan. Mimashma Shenemar Echol in Posuk Tes, the Posuk is said, we'll say in the positive. It says there, maybe let's glance at the side just to get a feeling and a flavor of the Posuk. It says, we're reading on the outside margin, Posuk Tes, Ezet Tochlu Mikol Asher Bamayim. This you can eat from everything found in the waters. Kol Asher Loi Snapir Vekaskeses, anything that has fins and scales, Bamayim, Bayamim, Uvenecholim, Oisom Tochelu. It says there, things that have fins and scales in the water, in seas, in rivers, that is what you're allowed to eat. So, we in looking at that pasuk, the Brisa here says, Mimashma Shenema Echol Es Sheyeshlo. You can eat that which has the signs. Yeshlo means it has. It has the signs of kashrus, fins and scales. Shomea Ani, I on my own would have been able to derive Alto Echol Es Sheyeshlo. Well then, you could infer, don't eat something that doesn't have the signs. Umimashma shenemar. Now, had I had posuk yud aleph, let's glance at posuk yud aleph. It says, v'sheketzu lochem ibsorim lo tochelu v'esnivlosam tishaketsu. This is coming off of posuk yud, we should have mentioned, where it says in posuk yud, kol asher ein lo snapir v'kaskeses, something that doesn't have the fins and scales, bayam v'cholim, in the seas and rivers, mikol sheretzimayim, mikol nefesh chaya shebamayim, sheketzim lochem. And it says, sheketzu lochem in posuk yud aleph, mibsorim lo tochelu. So from the fact that it says in Pasuk Yud Aleph, don't eat, al tochal es she'en lo, don't eat that which does not have the signs, shome'ani, then I could have inferred from Pasukim Yud and Yud Aleph, I could have inferred, echol es she'esh lo, that you are able to, you can eat those creatures that have the fins and scales. Once again, don't eat something that doesn't have fins and scales. So what would you infer? If it has fins and scales, you could eat it. The Lama Shonan. So why is it taught? Why is Pasuk Tes taught? Or in a more general sense, why the redundancy? Why the extra clarification, if you will? The Torah strives for brevity in general. And we actually saw a Gemara like that not long ago, that the Torah wants you to teach with clarity, but also with brevity. So why is there seeming overkill in these psukim? Answer: Lav or lav be'aseh v'lo za'aseh. If someone were to eat a sea creature that doesn't have fins and scales, he will be in fact violating a positive command and a negative command. So in order for us to not merely determine what's kosher, but in order for us to realize that there is a double violation, the Torah writes this in the positive and in the negative. Tochlu mikol asher b'mayim. Now this phrase comes from the beginning of Pasuk Tes, the early part of Pasuk Tes. It says, Ezet tochlu mikol asher b'mayim. Ma Talmud Lomar. Why is that stated? It says at the end of that very pasuk, says Osam Tochelu. So what do I gain by having this phrase that appears at the beginning of the pasuk? Sheyochol, in other words, without this opening Tochlu, I would have thought Sheyochol. Hoil v'hitir. Now we're about to learn something that is very obscure, and that's only because we haven't learned Daf Samach Zayin yet. So we will just move along in the Gemara without elaborating on what these phrases mean. Sheyochol, had I not had the opening of Pasuk Tes, hoil v'hitir b'mefurash v'hitir b'stam, since the Torah gives an allowance b'mefurash and gives an allowance b'stam, ma kishihiter b'mefurash lo hiter elo b'kelim, just like when it gives an allowance, the allowance is limited to vessels. We're speaking about the hitir, the allowance of eating things without kosher signs. So since there is an allowance, but with regard to vessels alone, af kishiter b'stam, so too when you have an allowance b'stam, lo hiter elo b'kelim, the allowance of eating the worms, for example, would be limited to those that develop only in vessels, as opposed to holes in the ground. Minayin l'rabois boro shichurim oros, from where do I know to include, to extend this leniency to water creatures lacking kosher signs, to boros shichurim oros, these are different types of pits dug into the ground, you can literally bend over and drink the water from a pit, the eino nimna, and just slurp up the water, and eino nimna, don't be withheld or restricted, even though you might be drinking up some worms. How do you know that? How do you know to include these elements, boros, maoros, and shichin, even though they're not vessels? Talmud lomar, tochlu mikol asher b'mayim. That's what the role of the opening of pasuk tes does. It serves to include bodies or areas of water that go beyond that which seems to be allowed by the Torah in a more explicit fashion. The Gemara asks, Heichon hitir bekelim, where was this initial allowance of worms being the sea water creatures, not just worms, but water creatures lacking kosher signs, where was this allowance made? Dichtiv, it says in Pasuk Tes, Ezeh tochlu mikol asher b'mayim, and the continuation of that Pasuk says, and we've written between the lines, kol asher lo yisnabir v'kaskeses b'mayim b'yamim uv'necholim. Now, we're going to go over this again with a new emphasis. The Pasuk makes reference to snapir v'kaskeses. It says, anything that has snapir v'kaskeses, you can eat. But now, this requirement of snapir v'kaskeses, it was stated where? So it says in the Pasuk, b'yamim uv'necholim, hu d'chi'is le'achol d'les le'lo techol. When is the snapir v'kaskeses requirement? Well, just look in the Pasuk. It says you've got this requirement when you're dealing with seas and rivers. When you're dealing with seas and rivers, so we've written with a phrase marking, we're reading the Gemara again, it says, Dechi isle, when it has the snapir v'kaskeses echol, the lesle lo techol. If it doesn't have, you can't eat it. So when was this stated? This was stated with regard to the yamim and the necholim, the seas and the rivers, as you can see in the pasuk. We are able to infer ha bekelim, if you're dealing with vessels. Now vessels are totally unrelated to seas and rivers. When it comes to vessels, so we don't have that rule. Then we can say afagav de lesle echol, even if it doesn't have the snapir v'kaskeses, you are able to eat. Let us go on in the Gemara, but before doing so, we notice a triangle, a new geometric form with regard to this sukya. We have in the outside margin under our mivneh, heading mivneh meaning the structure, we feature a triangle, and we've written hatsa'ois chilufios, alternative suggestions. So let's continue. Up till now, what have we said? Kosher signs are required when you're dealing with yamim and cholim, seas and rivers. Kosher signs are not required when you're dealing with vessels. And we did this by reading the pasuk with a tone of inference. Well, I want to suggest something alternative. Amo, maybe say as follows. Bekelim afal gav de isle lo techol. Creatures that develop in vessels, even if they do have the snapir v'kaskeses, you cannot eat. In other words, taking the same pasuk, our pasuk, it says that if something's got bodies, it's got the snabi v'kaskesis in the seas, you can eat it. You could infer from that, well, if it's got body signs in vessels, you cannot eat it. So the Gemara says, lo salka daitach. Don't even entertain that possibility. Don't think thusly, that if it's got kosher signs, but it developed in a vessel, that you shouldn't be allowed to eat it. Dichtiv. It says in Pasuk Yud, v'chol asher ein lo snabir v'kaskeses, something that lacks fins and scales bayam v'kolim, mikol sheret samayim. Bayamim uvenecholim deles le lo techul. This pasuk is telling me that when you're dealing with seas and rivers, if the creature doesn't have fins and scales, you cannot eat it. So where is there a restriction? The restriction is concerns. The restriction is limited, we'll say, to yamim and necholim. Ha bekelim. However, if you're dealing with something other than yamim and necholim, you're dealing with vessels. Afagav de lesle echol. Even if it doesn't have the signs of kashrus, you are able to eat it. So to suggest that when it comes to vessels, even if it does have signs of kashrus, you would not be able to eat it, well, that is precluded by that which is stated in Pasuk Yud. In Pasuk Yud, we have the additional inference that leads us to say that when it comes to vessels, there is no rule whatsoever. There are no rules or signs of kashrus required whatsoever. A new suggestion. V'ema, maybe we should approach the pasuk as follows. B'mayim equals klal. B'yamim uv'necholim equals prat. And then the sentence structure is klal uprat ein b'chlal elamashe b'prat. Rules of kashrus would be limited to that which is specified. Klal means a general statement, prat is a specific. And what would the result be? Yamim unecholim in, only in seas and rivers would there be a requirement of fins and scales. Ne'itzim v'charitzim lo, but when it comes to irrigation ditches, Ne'itzim and Charitzim, different types of ditches that have running water in it. With regard to those things, since they're not alluded to in the Pasuk specifies only Yamim and Necholim, there is a sign, a kosher sign requirement. However, if you have Ne'itzim and Charitzim, which have running water, but they're not seas nor rivers, there would be no need for signs of kashrus, and certainly with regard to a pit, a bore, which is stagnant water, which is even more, which is further away from seas and rivers, further away meaning even more dislike, or unlike. If that be the case, in other words, if we come out with that conclusion, the question would be, then why do I need the tochlu from the beginning of Pasuk Tes? Don't forget, we had originally asked the question of what do I need the tochlu from the beginning of Pasuk Tes, where I needed to include, and the Brisa had said, I need the beginning of Pasuk Tes to include these non-kosher sign creatures that develop in Boru, Shichin, and Ma'oras. Well, I wouldn't need that. If I am to darshan the pasuk as was just suggested by the second triangle, that it's darshan in a klalu prat fashion, I would have then realized an allowance for the Boru, Shichin, and Ma'oras simply because it's a klalu prat setup where the only time kosher signs would be required would be in the prat, which are seas and rivers, and nothing beyond that. The Gemara answers, I'll tell you why, if you want to have a leniency with regard to boros, why you've got to have the beginning of Pasuk Tes. The reason is because bemayim, this word appeared in, as we'll call it, an additional word that appears in Pasuk Yud. It says, Asher Bamayim. That word, Bamayim, Chozar V'Kolal. we have now an additional klal, so that it's not a klal uprat structure alone, but it's a klal prat uklal structure. That is, in fact, more inclusive. As a result of it being more inclusive, what are we saying practically? That as far as where are signs of kashrus necessary, not only in yamim and necholim, but in ne'itzim and haritzim as well, you've got to have signs of kashrus. So how will I know that the signs of kashrus are needed there and not extended even to the boar? So for that we have the beginning of Pasuk Tes that tells me Ezet Tochlu, meaning that when it comes to pits and other areas of stagnant water, you don't have the kosher sign requirement. The Gemara asks, though, that the word Bamayim that we just said was a klal. So the truth is, we may have said something a bit inaccurate before, and that is the word Bamayim appears a few times. But here we have the following problem. The Gemara asks, Hani tre kloli desmichi lahadodi ninhu. The Bamayim in fact comes on the heels of another klal expression. The Rashi at the bottom of the page says, Bamayim chozer v'kolal, trei bamayim ksivi gabi hadodi. You have the word bamayim next to each other. It says, mikol asher bamayim, kol asher lo snapir v'kaskeses bamayim. So in that pasuk, you've got the word bamayim with next to each other, in the sense that the yamim and necholim are not found between the two bamayim words, which are two general expressions. And as a result of that, how can you say that it's a klal pratu klal structure? Omar Ravina. Ravina answers, Kida amri b'marova, as is taught in Eretz Yisrael. Where you find two general expressions that are next to each other, hatel prat beinehem v'dunam beklal uprat uklal. You put the prat between them and darshan it as a klal prat uklal, and you can see with our colon, we indicate keep reading now, and the Gemara explains what it just said. Bamayim is klal. Bayamim uvenecholim equals prat. That's the specifics. Bamayim chozar v'kol. And again, we have the second bamayim serves as a klal. Klal uprat uklal yatadon elokein haprat. You expound or establish the rule based on will be more inclusive, but that which we include has to be similar to the specifics. In this case, the specifics are seas and rivers, and we're dealing with the concept of a necessity of having signs of kashrus. Where is it necessary to have signs of kashrus? Skins and fins and scales. Mahaprat mefurash mayim noivim, just like that which is spelled out explicitly, namely, rivers and seas have flowing water. Avko mayim noivim. So to other situations, other types of water, bodies of water that have flowing water, there we will have a kosher sign requirement. My ravi. So what's included? Charitzin uneisim leisura. These are charitzim and neisim, as we mentioned before, are ditches that have in them flowing water. The isura means with restriction. Namely, there we have the necessity of having signs of kashrus, fins and scales. Umay miyate, what's not included? Boros, Shifin, Umaoros, Lehetera. This is their standing water, stagnant water, as is characteristic of these different kinds of pits. Boros, Shichen, Umaoros. There, even if the creature doesn't have signs of kashrus, if it developed in those sources of water, in those types of that water situation, you can consume it. The Amor, another suggestion or alternative to the reality is raised. The Amor Maha Prat Mufurush Mayim Gedalim Algabi Karka. Af Kol Mayim Gedalim Algabi Karka. Just like the Prat, the Yamim Anecholim, is a reference to water that's attached to the ground, so too, and there we have a necessity of fins and scales, so to any situation where the water is attached to the ground, you need to have fins and scales. Umay Ravi, what will be included if you look at the pasuk in this way? Afilu boros shichne moros li surah. Then even creatures lacking signs of kashrus that develop in pits, and there's boros shichne moros, different types of standing water, should be prohibited. Umay mi'eit, what will be excluded from this restriction? Mi'eit kalim, vessels. And we end up saying that only in vessels will we be able to waive the signs of kashrus, the fin and scale requirement. Well, if you say like that suggestion, im kein tochlu mayahanile, then of what benefit will tochlu be? In other words, as far as an allowance for kalim is concerned, that was already established. That was established by the end of pasuk tes. So kalim is already allowed, namely no kosher sign requirement. What am I going to do with the tochlu expression from the beginning of pasuk tes? What will its role be if I limit the allowance to kalim? So in order to justify or to activate, to see benefit in the word tochlu, I thereby include not only vessels, but boros, shichen, moros, other forms of standing water, even though they are attached to the ground, but there you do not have to have signs of kashrus. So just to summarize what we have said, if you are dealing with running water, creatures that develop in that type of situation, you need to have signs of kashrus. Creatures that develop in standing water, there you don't need to have signs of kashrus. And of course, in each one of these cases, we're talking about creatures that developed only in those areas. We're not talking about someone who, let us say, took a creature that lacks fins and scales from the sea and put it into a pit. That obviously would be prohibited. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.